Good morning. For most of my life, I've really wanted to be an optimist. But by both nature and nurture, I'm probably inclined more to pessimism. I know that surprises many of you. But the truth is that realism is as much as I can manage most times. So here again we go with the half full versus half empty bottle of water. The pessimist views and says it's half empty. The optimist views and says it's half full. The realist says it's a half a bottle of water. But there are a couple of facts that we may need to consider. In reality, how the container is viewed or what is said about it doesn't actually change how much water is in the bottle. But how the container is viewed, and I suppose to some degree what is said about it, can change how we think, how we feel, and how we react, not just to a bottle of water, but to life itself. The pessimist thinks and feels and reacts as if it is lacking, that it is not, and can never be enough because it's half empty. The optimist thinks and reacts as if it is superfluous, that it is and will always be more than enough. The realist thinks and feels and acts as if it is sufficient, at least for now. In the book of Matthew, in the 6th chapter, in verse 11, as part of the disciples' prayer that Jesus taught them to pray, the text says, in Jesus' word, "Give us this day our daily bread." One of the things we need to consider from that passage is the word daily. Daily bread is enough for now. Even in Matthew, the 6th chapter, in the last verse of this particular text, Jesus says, "Therefore, do not be anxious for tomorrow. For tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." So whether optimist, pessimist, or realist, the truth remains that it's a half a bottle of water. And even in dire circumstances, that would probably be enough to sustain me for today. And in that, I need to be content. Tomorrow will care for itself. There's enough trouble in today without worrying about tomorrow because I only have a half a bottle of water. And it won't be enough for today and tomorrow. Tomorrow will care for itself. Well, I hope you realize this is not just an exercise and a perhaps overused illustration. We're not talking about Father's Day today. We live, as Brother Hornberger prayed, in a very strange time. We've moved from, you're all sitting out there still wearing masks. But we have gone from that to a world that is so strange to us because of the violence, because of the protests, because of all the things going on around about us. And I'm not one to walk around the elephant that is in the room. I'm the realist, remember? Or at least I try to be. I hope to be. As much as I strive for optimism, I sometimes just settle for the realism. What does any of this have to do with things spiritual? Our views and how we express them often indicates how we think and how we feel and how we react to much more than just a container of water. But how we view and what we say usually does not actually change the realities of the situation. I don't know what your thoughts are about what's going on in the world around us. But I would like you to consider just a couple of brief examples with me from John 1 and verse 46. There's a simple statement there. Philip in verse 44 is from Bethsaida. He finds his brother Nathanael and says to him in verse 45, "We have found him of whom Moses and the law and the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Verse 46, "And Nathanael said to him, 'Can any good thing come out of Nazareth?'" Nathanael, where are you? "Can any good thing come out of Nazareth?" Nathanael's question was probably rhetorical, or at least meant that way. It was likely laced with a heavy dose of sarcasm, and it was definitely pessimistic. But the answer to that rhetorical question, sarcastically given from a viewpoint of pessimism, is yes, Nathanael. Because Nathanael himself comes to realize in verse 49, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God." Something did come from Nazareth. Despite Nathanael's pessimism, his sarcasm, and his rhetorical question. In Titus, the first chapter, there's another passage I'd like you to consider just momentarily with me. In Titus chapter 1, Paul writes to Titus and says, "One of themselves, a prophet of their own, said, 'Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons.'" Really? Where was Titus when this is being written? He's been left behind in Crete to help the church there in Crete, surely made up of Cretans. That's where the word comes from. And he's been charged with putting in order those things that remain, appointing elders in the church on Crete. So are Cretans, as one of their poets said, always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons? Apparently not. Titus and the church there in Crete seems to indicate otherwise. Now, let's consider a few realities. And I hope you're really thinking about what's going on in our world as we're looking at these things. Had bad things come from Nazareth before? Well, apparently, since that seemed to be the general consensus that Nathanael is espousing. But was everything that came from Nazareth bad? Not all, obviously, despite the fact that the pessimists thought so. Jesus from Nazareth was the ultimate good. In Acts 10 and verse 38, Peter said he went about doing good. He was from Nazareth. But did Jesus being from Nazareth change the fact that evidently a lot of bad people and other things come from Nazareth? No. Jesus being from there didn't change everything else. The same, I think, could be said for Crete. The reality was that at least one good thing did come from Nazareth, and that was sufficient. Because in John 1, in verses 16 and 17, in John 1, in verses 17 through 29. He is that light of the world that changed everything by bringing salvation to all men, making it available to all men. So I want to leave you this morning with a few practical applications. The pessimist sees only the bad, and the optimist sees only the good. The realist realizes that both good and bad exist in the same space and in the same time. That the bottle contains both the emptiness of air and the sustenance of water at the same time. Neither one, the emptiness of the air or the sustenance of the water, precludes the other from existing. They're both there. Nathaniel and the Cretan prophet were both wrong. And I'm going to tell you something this morning that's not pleasant for me to say or you to hear. But so also are wrong those who only see good people being treated badly and bad people being treated well. Both of those are wrong. Both exist, and neither one precludes the existence of the other. The reality is that we should be the ones treating everyone well and better even than they deserve. I want you to do something this afternoon. As Brother Monty invited you to go back and reread Psalm 19, I want you to go back and look at Matthew 18, verse 21 through 35, which I believe, is, if memory serves me correct, is the end of the chapter. It begins in that passage by Peter asking a question about forgiveness. What follows is an amazing statement of Jesus and then a parable. And the parable is that of the unmerciful servant. One who owed his master far more than he could ever repay. And yet threw himself at the master's mercy, begging for exactly that, mercy. And it was given to him, and yet he went right out and took someone who owed him far less, a easily repayable amount, whereas his debt was insurmountable, could not, despite what he said, could not have been repaid in a lifetime of servant's wages, though he vowed to do so. But his own, the one that owed him money, could have easily repaid that debt, and yet he refused to be merciful. And Jesus concludes the parable by talking about those who receive mercy being willing, should be willing, to provide mercy. Folks, we have to return good for evil. Because returning evil for evil directly contradicts what Jesus is teaching in that parable and what Paul wrote to the Romans in the 13th chapter in verses 17 through 21, where he talks about overcoming evil with good and never paying back evil for evil to anyone. We need to think of these things in our time, in this time, with everything that's going on around about us. That's who we're supposed to be. The pessimist sees only bad police and good protesters. The optimist sees only good police and bad protesters. The realist sees that, yes, there are some bad police, but is not blinded to the good ones. And the realist sees the good police, but is not blinded to the bad ones. I want to give you one little editorial thought right here. I know there are bad police, and let me tell you how I know. Because there are bad lawyers. There are bad bankers. There are bad firemen. There are bad doctors. There are bad preachers. There are bad anything and every occupation that humanity takes on as a vocation. There are bad ones that do it for the wrong reasons, in the wrong ways, and abuse their position. But that doesn't change the fact that there are also a lot of good lawyers, despite the jokes. There are a lot of good doctors and plumbers. There's even a few good preachers. The realist recognizes the good and the bad, that they coexist in the same world. I'm not saying it should be that way. I'm saying it is that way. And to acknowledge one and deny the other, it's just not being real. Because we live in a fallen world. Since the Garden of Eden, there have been both good and bad, and the biblical account of history shares them all. It tells us of the horrific things that men can do to one another, and it tells us of the great faith and endurance of a lot of other folks as well. The realist sees the good protesters who were genuinely concerned about and are affected by racism, but is not blind to the bad protesters either. To the thugs and the thieves, to those who are brutal and violent, to their fellow man and to others' possessions. We need to also understand that stereotypes exist. That's a real thing. And it's wrong to use stereotypes to judge everybody. But it's also wrong to be the cause of stereotypes being generated. Neither of those is good. The reality is that stereotypes exist in our world, but we don't have to use them and we don't have to cause them. In fact, we shouldn't use them and we better not cause them. This world is flawed. This world is doomed to destruction. That's not my pessimism taking over. That's Bible. Read with me from 2 Peter, the 3rd chapter, for just a few moments as we close. 2 Peter, the 3rd chapter. Notice verse 7. But the present heavens and earth by his word are being reserved for fire, kept for the day of judgment and destruction of ungodly men. I realize this sermon is not some uplifting, feel-good Father's Day sermon, but it's the reality of where we are in this world and its history. This world is not, nor will it become, some utopian panacea of life for any of us or any of those who follow us. Because 1 Peter 3:7 says it is doomed to destruction. It is devoted to destruction. That's what the Greek term anathema actually means. Devoted to destruction. That's where all of this is going. That's not me being a downer. That's what the Word of God says. This world is doomed to destruction. Exactly how, when, and why, God doesn't tell us. He does say in this passage it's going to be burned with fire, and the every indication throughout the New Testament is when he's ready for it to be destroyed. Realistically, utopian panaceas only occur in one place. Look at 2 Peter 3 and verse 13. According to his promise, we are looking for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. My boys heard it so often when they were growing up, they got tired of it and would quote it to me even before I could quote it to them when they began complaining. God never promised this life was fair. The next life will be beyond fair. It will be filled with grace and mercy for those who have manifested the same here. Now, we've read verse 7 and we've looked at verse 13. I want you to look at some of the verses between for just a second here. In verse 9, the Lord is not slow as some men count slowness, but is patient toward you. That's me and you and everybody from the time that Peter wrote this by inspiration until the end of time who reads it. The Lord is being patient with us to do the right things and to show the world a better way to be. Realistically. Not to give them some sort of pie in the sky, heaven on earth mentality of the prosperity gospel, but the reality of it, that this world and everything in it is going to be burned up. So how should we live? Verse 11, since these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Looking for and hastening, that means eagerly wanting it to appear. Hastening. Let me tell you one quick story. A couple of weeks ago, we were coming to services and coming across Southport, and there was a guy out in front of the Nazarene church over there waving me in. He thought he recognized me or the car or something. I don't know. I was wearing a shirt and tie, and he waved real big, started waving me in. But he was hastening me, okay? That's the connection. He was hastening me. Come on in. We're ready for you. It wasn't just doing it to everyone. He thought he recognized me, apparently. I waved and drove right on by. I wondered what he thought afterwards. Who was that guy? What sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening holy conduct, godliness. If we're being overly optimistic about life itself, rather than having the realism of what God's Word teaches us, that evil has always existed since the Garden of Eden and will continue to exist until the end of time, until all those things are burned up. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to change it. Not at all. But what I am saying is that we're never going to completely change it. This world is still going to be doomed to destruction. And if we hope for life in this life, we are of all men most to be pitied. What sort of people ought you to be? In all holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, on account of which the heavens will be destroyed by burning, and the elements will melt with intense heat. But according to His promise, we are looking for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. I have one question for you. It is not whether you are an optimist or a pessimist or a realist, it is simply this. Are you ready for that new heavens and new earth to be revealed? By living in holy conduct and godliness and eagerly looking forward to, or instead are you saying, no, not yet, Lord, not yet? Which is it? Are you ready? I don't try to be depressing, but maybe that's exactly what I've been this morning. I hope not. But we have to realize a few things. I hope some of this has helped at least some of you this morning. If we can help you in other ways, to be ready for the end of the world. Doomsday, yes, it's coming. Don't know when, but it's coming. We can help you. Come while we stand and while we sing.